Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Hello, everyone. This is Phil Yeager, and welcome to Yeager CPA Review and More. Today, once again, we have more. And this podcast is sponsored by Yeager CPA Review. And interestingly enough, I'm Phil Yeager. I own that CPA Review course. So if you're looking for CPA Review, all right, please go to YeagerCPAReview.com. And by the way, you can get a 3-day use of any part of the exam. Very important. And secondly, we now started a virtual CPA Review course. All right, as a result of COVID and everyone's into virtual, we decided to do a 2-hour CPA course every Sunday between 12 and 2 p.m. And it's virtual, but this is where it's different than other virtuals. It is live in real time. So therefore, you can ask questions if you want to put your camera on, if you want to put your microphone on, all right, you can talk to me, all right. And if you're shy and you don't want to turn the camera on or talk to me, all right, we have a chat room. So please give us a call at 301-874-4900. That's 301-874-4900, extension 6. Talk to Sonny if you have any questions, and he'll give you the info you need to look at this CPA Review program or the virtual CPA Review. Today, we have as our guest, Chris. He was on our podcast on roughly December of 2019, way before the COVID problem, all right? So when I spoke to him, all right, we didn't worry. We weren't even talking. No, who knew this pandemic was coming, okay? Did anybody know? I didn't know. Chris, did you know?
Nope.
All right. And Chris is down in probably one of my favorite areas, Hilton Head, South Carolina, right?
That's exactly right.
Chris is a CPA, all right, which stands for Cleaning, Pressing, and Alterations. No, just kidding. CPA, Certified Public Accountant. And also, he has a CVA, all right, which means that, I think that's Certified Valuation Accountant?
Valuation Analyst.
Valuation Analyst, okay? Mm-hmm. We'll talk about what that is, because I'm not sure what it is, all right? And on his LinkedIn bio, he says here, he is a virtual CFO for marketing and creative agencies. Now, he was a virtual advisor even before the pandemic. So Chris saw this pandemic coming, and he said, you know, back in December, and we spoke about this, he said, Phil, he says, you know, I think we're going to have to go to virtual. So I said, oh, what is virtual, Chris? He says, well, I'm a virtual CFO. So Chris was ahead of everybody else, right, Chris?
Certainly feels like, we were well positioned. That's for sure. I don't know about ahead of everybody else, but definitely.
Well, let's give you the credit. Chris was ahead of everyone else, okay? And let's talk about, first of all, Chris, what do you do as a virtual CFO, Chief Financial Officer for marketing and creative agencies?
Okay, so we cover, you know, the bookkeeping and the accounting. That's the historical scorekeeping stuff, right? Everybody's familiar with bookkeeping and outsource controller. We cover that, but we go a step further with the virtual CFO, where we're focused on things that are future focused. We're managing cash flow or answering questions about PPP loans. It's more of an advisory type service that's focused on the future, whereas accounting is focused on the past.
And actually, prior to the pandemic, all right, you couldn't actually, give any consulting on the PPP plan, right?
No, didn't exist. The Payroll Protection Program that came out of the CARES Act, which was passed in March of this year. Was it March or early April? I don't know. It feels like we're on March.
It was probably early April. Yeah,
right.
Early April. Yeah.
Yeah, all the days run together at this point. But basically, it was a program for small businesses where they would get loans from the government via the SBA in order to continue operations and to maintain their headcount. There's a lot that was in the CARES Act, and there's a lot that goes along with the PPP loans. So basically what I said to my team, early early April, late March-ish was, hey, we've got a whole bunch of new legislation that's come out. We already operate virtually, so nothing is changing as far as firm operations. This is really just a great opportunity for us to provide value to clients and non-clients alike. So we basically just took the bull by the horns and talked to everybody that would talk to us, trying to get them information as far as how to best manage their business, you know, through that process.
And once the pandemic occurred, it started hurting small businesses. So the government basically came up with a bailout plan, all right, this PPO plan, and it has loan forgiveness if you meet certain requirements. However, I remember my daughter, who has a preschool called Goddard School in Frederick, Maryland, all right, she applied for this PPP. Now, interestingly enough, all right, when she applied for it, the bank wasn't really familiar with what was involved. And as they were trying to apply for this, they changed the rules every day, just about. Did you find that?
Yeah, absolutely. Some point in April, I work from home, so I'm working out of basically the living room. And my wife was sitting on the couch. She was working from home as well. And the kids are here and they're running around. And I said to her, like in the middle of the day, I looked at her, I said, you know, I can't even tell you what the tax law is going to be tomorrow. And that's really remarkable. That's kind of where we were, you know, 4, 5, 6 months ago. And you know, it's calmed down a little bit, but we'll see, right? We've got an election coming up. We've got clamorings from Congress as far as whether or not they're going to do more. So we'll see at this point.
Now, not only did it take the requirements changing constantly, all right, also now it's possibly the time to either pay it back or get it forgived, all right? And I heard to determine the forgiveness provisions, that's also, they've made it complicated, right?
Very complicated. And, you know, that what we've advised our clients on is let's just pump the brakes as far as forgiveness and going through that process to see what Congress does as far as legislation version 4, because one of the things that's going around is that there's going to be basically automatic forgiveness for loans under some certain amount. So if you read the original CARES Act, it seemed very much kind of like a government handout. You know, we're going to basically shower you with all of this money and it's going to be tax-free and it's going to be forgiven. So it's a loan, but it's not really a loan. And there's going to be no interest for 6 months and all this sort of stuff. And then, you know, the regs came out and it was like, well, you know, it's probably going to be taxable or effectively taxable, meaning that the funds that you received, the expenses that you paid for them are no longer deductible on the tax return. So effectively that makes the loan taxable. Whether or not that gets fixed, you know, before the end of the year here, don't know, waiting to see what happens there. The amount of the loans, what they're going to do as far as automatic forgiveness, because that kind of seems like it's in the spirit of the way that the CARES Act was written. We'll see. You know, it's just a lot of we'll see at this point. And then you hear, you know, in the news in the last week, they're seeing all this PPP fraud. So what effect that's going to have on the contemplated legislation, that's another monkey wrench in the whole thing. So at this point, the way that we're advising our clients is let's wait and see what happens. Organizations that shouldn't have gotten the loans, basically, you know, may or may not have gotten the loans. We'll see. You know, it's going to depend on how that sways the minds of the lawmakers and how much you know, truth there is to all of that.
And this was basically run by the SBA, Small Business Administration.
The SBA, and then via various, you know, various banks, yeah, and lending organizations, not necessarily even banks.
Yeah, so it had good intentions, but unfortunately, there were companies that were, and this is the thing that's coming up now, billion-dollar companies that got these loans. And believe me, a billion-dollar company does not need this money. And the problem is, I mean, my daughter's telling me, the forgiveness provisions are so involved. But luckily, she's with a bank where they walked her through everything, all right? And they're now walking her through what she has to do to make sure the payback is, the loan is forgiven, okay? Now, how did you get involved with that? Did you help people fill out the forms? What did you do?
We did not help people fill out the forms. Well, we were concerned with the liability of that. Like, we didn't have an engagement letter for PPP PPP loans. Like, that didn't exist. So I was personally concerned with the liability of getting involved with that, especially with all of the unknowns. What we did do is advise clients, here's what we know about the programs. Here's how we think that that applies to you. And then we would compile their information for them as far as what they would need to provide to the bank in order to get that loan.
So you put together the package more or less, didn't you?
Not the whole package. No, like we would say, you know, if you need payroll reports, we'll go get those for you. And we'll tell you how much your payroll has been for, you know, whatever period of time. And, you know, we'll run your P&L and we'll give you that as well. And that's that. We did not fill out any applications for any clients. No.
Was the application pretty simple itself?
It didn't seem overly complicated. The complicated part was how the bank was interpreting it. And it really depended on the bank. I mean, we had local banks that treated the documentation that they were asking for totally differently. You know, one wants one thing, the other wants another thing. And, you know, it was a mess there for a really long time.
Did this increase your revenue tremendously? This act?
Directly, not a penny. Indirectly, yes. So we didn't charge anybody for that guidance at all. You know, like I said, you know, a couple minutes ago, basically what I told my team was we are here to be as helpful as possible for whatever period of time that this is going to cover. And let's just do that. And we're basically going to trade on karma. That's exactly what I said.
How did you get money? How did you make revenue indirectly?
Great question. You know, for one, we've got clients for life now. The people who we've helped, clients for life. They've left us good reviews on social media, great reviews on social media. That has an effect. They've referred us to their friends and family and you know, other businesses. That's had an effect. So indirectly, it's definitely helped. Directly, though, I didn't send a single bill for, you know, talking to me for a half hour for PPP guidance. Not a single one.
Yeah, you wanted to show your clients you don't nickel and dime them.
Right. Plus, that's something that's covered under the way that we operate anyway. You know, virtual CFO clients for the most part meet with us on a monthly basis. So we would either cover that inside of that monthly meeting, and we have been covering actually for the last, 5 months now, inside of those monthly meetings. But when the CARES Act originally came out, I just said, hey, look, let's book a half hour call. Let's get on the phone or on video chat and let's just talk through this. This is really important. I don't want you to miss out. Because the flip side was also true, right? If we just kind of let that go and if we weren't helpful, then those people are probably going to go find another accountant anyway. So the least we can do is be helpful. Part of that was covered by our existing agreements. And then the other part of it is, hey, let's just do what's right. And, you know, at some point it'll be worthwhile. It doesn't need to be today, but it'll be worthwhile in the future.
So you become the CFO for companies that can't afford to hire CFOs on a full-time basis, right?
Yep. Or don't have the infrastructure for their own accounting teams, you know, accounting technology or anything like that. We do that.
Prior to the pandemic, you know how many accountants were, the CPAs were doing this virtual CFO? Do you check the competition?
I check my competition in the marketing and creative agency space. I think there have been a couple who have popped up there in the last, I don't know, year or so. It's hard to say exactly what the timing has been, but you know, the conversations that I was having prior to the pandemic, you know, it wouldn't be half, but there would be a couple out of 10. So maybe 2 or 3 out of 10 would say, well, you know, I really want somebody local and I want to, you know, sit down with them face to face and come to an office and things like that. I have not heard that argument once in 6 months now.
Okay, but how do you handle that objection before the virtual situation?
Yeah, so I mean, you basically talk about, you know, we're face-to-face over video conference. Everything that we do is video conference, so we're face-to-face. So it's just like we're in a virtual office. You talk about how you're paperless. So, you know, there's really no need for documents, you know, hard copy documents. And then you talk about the fact that, well, if we're on a video conference, we can share screens. I can show you exactly what I'm looking at. I can walk you through your QuickBooks file. I can show you the calculations that we're working with, those sorts of things. That's generally how I would handle that pre-pandemic. Now, I mean, it's not even a conversation.
Now, do you help the people now with the forgiveness part? Are you doing that too?
We are going to provide the same sort of advice. We're not going to file the forgiveness applications. We're keeping an eye on where forgiveness is from a legislative perspective. But the advice that we've given to clients over the last couple of months is let's just wait and see exactly what happens.
How do you give them the advice? You send out letters or memos?
Generally, we'll wrap that into our virtual CFO calls.
Oh, okay.
Monthly calls. Okay. Yeah, we'll do, you know, just a 2-minute blurb on here's what's new about PVP this week, that sort of thing.
Have you found that the new accounting software has hurt what you do? Or do they still, even though these clients have maybe QuickBooks or something, they still want you to prepare financial statements?
That's a good question. I think QuickBooks and Xero and FreshBooks and Wave and all the rest of them have made accounting more accessible for a larger population of business owners. I think that that's true. I don't think that it's necessarily taking revenue from us. You know, the folks who want to manage it themselves and who wanted to have their hands in the day-to-day accounting, generally they were going to do that anyway, I think. So I don't think it's taking work away from us indirectly. If anything, you know, it provides an opportunity at some point. I mean, those people still need a tax return. So they're still going to come to us for a tax return. We're still going to look at the financials. And if we see problems with the financials, we point them out. We'll say, this looks like it's problematic. This looks like it's problematic. It probably comes from doing X, Y, and Z in QuickBooks. If you want, we'll you know, add us to your file and we'll pop in there and poke around. And then that provides us an opportunity to provide some more guidance. So it's basically politely saying, there are problems with the way that you're doing things. Maybe somebody else should do this. That's a polite way of doing it, I think. But then, you know, again, it's just a matter of being helpful. So, like, if we see problems, here's what the problem is. Here's how to fix it. If you want to engage us to fix it for you and maintain it for you going forward, we can do that.
The Trump Tax Act had major changes to the tax code. Do you get involved with those changes in the taxes dealing with the CARE Act?
Yeah. Yeah. We get involved with
Do you know off the top of your head, what are some of the changes the CARES Act did to the Trump Act?
I think the biggest thing that the CARES Act is going to have is around PPP and whether or not those loans get forgiven. I mean, we've got for the most part, we're working with small business clients. For the most part, all of those small business clients got funds. I think that that's going to be the biggest thing is whether or not you can deduct those expenses, you know, on your tax return for 2020. That's going to be the biggest thing because effectively those loans now become taxable. You know, that said, I mean, we're still waiting on regs to come out. We're still waiting for the guidance. I think it's really too early to tell exactly how things are going to be impacted.
I just saw a few of the changes, like, you know, under the Trump Act, net operating losses of a business can only be carried forward, where the CARES Act said, no, net operating losses now can be carried back
right.
And also carried forward. That was one change.
Right.
Right. But that's the only change I remember. And also, there's a limit on how much you can deduct for net operating loss. Wasn't like 85% or something, 80% of the taxable income? Do you remember that?
It's something like that, 80%.
I think that was eliminated too, the limit. But I'm trying to remember other provisions. Because they're going to test that, actually. They mentioned the SCPA is going to start testing changes in the CARES Act. Maybe the third quarter of 2020. But, writing CPA review books, you write something, right? Then they come out with something new. You have to add it, change the other thing, all right? And, hey, what happens if the administration changes? Do you think a lot of the provisions of the Trump Act will be eliminated?
Depends on what happens with Congress. So if the Senate flips and the House remains the same and you get a Democratic president, then yeah, I think it's fair to say that it's definitely going to change. If the Senate stays as is, or if that margin shrinks, I think you're, you know, 60-40, no. But, you know, if the Senate flips, then I think you're pretty much a lock. And if the Senate flips, I think you need to expect that you're going to have a Democrat president anyway. I think really, you know, as political as you need to get is whether or not we're going to have gridlock in Congress. And if you've got the House and the Senate are both the same color, then there's no gridlock. And if they're different, then there's gridlock and you're probably not going to get a change. I think it's that simple.
If Democrats get in, Democratic president, Senate remains Republican, the Congress remains Democratic, you think they're going to try to overturn that tax act which supposedly gave benefits to the, you know, maximum tax rate of 20% on a C corp return. You think that's going to be overturned?
Overturned in that scenario would be difficult, but to have it run out the clock in 2025, I think is more likely than not.
That's a long time from now.
Yeah.
When I spoke to you the first time, you were one of these individuals who were, well, you got awards for being under 40, under 40, right?
That's right.
And are you still 40 under 40?
We'll see. The nominations closed about 3 weeks ago and haven't heard anything yet this year, but we'll see.
Who votes on that?
It's selected. It's the nominations are open, and then the selection is done by CPA Practice Advisor, the magazine.
Oh, okay. All right. How do you determine who wins that thing?
You got me. They've got a panel, and they figure it out. I don't know.
And of course, I think you told me the award was. All right. And by the way, who puts this on? The CPA. It's a magazine, isn't it?
Yeah, CPA Practice Advisor.
You read that?
I do. It comes in my email.
Should people who are CPAs or planning on taking a CPA exam, would you recommend that they actually subscribe to that?
I would. I think it's always beneficial to consume as much content from as many different sources as you can, especially in the CPA space. That's what's helped me tremendously in my career, is consuming a bunch of content from a bunch of different places, whether or not it's related to the CPA or not, you know, directly anyway. I mean, I can remember way back when, a dozen years ago, taking the BEC exam, and there's a bunch of technology questions on there. As luck would have it, you know, my roommate in college was a computer science major. And I remember walking out of one exam specifically, and I texted him one of the questions, and I said, what is this even? And he was like, why are you asking me? I said, it was on the CPA exam. He said, that's really bizarre. But, you know.
Did you get it right?
I don't know. I mean, they don't tell you which ones you get right and which ones you get wrong.
Well, you know.
And they didn't at that
point.
We were
able to answer the question.
Yeah. In a reason, I was able to eliminate it down to like two and then pick one, you know.
Okay. But is it written in simple English, or is it very, is it like the tax code?
Oh, I don't recall.
Yeah, I mean, the articles, are they easy to read?
Yeah.
That's what I'm
saying. Yeah. I think CPA Practice Advisor is absolutely digestible.
Are they articles about cases that have occurred, or what do they talk about?
It runs the gamut. A lot of it. I mean, there's soft skills in there. There's more technical stuff in there. Practice management. I mean, I think it runs the gamut.
Why did you pick Hilton Head to open your office?
So both my wife and I vacationed in Hilton Head separately as kids. She's from Atlanta. I'm from New Jersey. She was a year behind me in school. She moved up to New Jersey after she graduated. That was a 2-year project that turned into 7. Had our first child up in New Jersey. And it got to the point where, you know, we wanted to be closer to her family. Wanted to be near the water, and you know, Hilton Head was just one of those natural places that fit.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah,
it really is, and it's.
Yep.
I think it's become more expensive. South Carolina is becoming actually a big area to move to, either retirement or people just leaving New Jersey, New York, and going to South Carolina. So
for sure.
It's it's a very nice area. If you haven't gone there, it's a great place to go for vacation, that type of thing. Now, you're also part of the AICPA Leadership Academy, all right? Are you a leader, Chris? Would you consider yourself a leader?
I would hope so.
What do you do? Do you mentor people? And people come to you to be mentored? Have you done any of that?
That occasionally happens, yeah. I'm also in the AICPA mentor program. I just got a new mentee 2 days ago. But I get questions, you know, from other folks about starting a firm, how to run a firm, you know, how do I go from senior accountant to manager? You know, I'm a CPA and I want to get, you probably don't know this about me, but I'm also a local politician. So I've gotten a couple of those. I'm a
CPA. Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm really, what are you? Are you mayor?
I am definitely not mayor. I am a county councilman though.
County councilman. Wow.
Yep. So I've got a couple of those. Like, I'm a CPA and I want to get into politics. What's that look like?
Oh, you want to get out of CPA and become a politician full time?
Absolutely not.
What do you do as a county councilman?
As a county councilman, we set policy for all of Beaufort County, which is where Hilton Head is, the unincorporated parts at least. So we've got several municipalities, Hilton Head being one, Bluffton being another, Port Royal and Beaufort, and those are basically the municipalities in the county, with the MSC being part. That's down in the weeds, but you know, the unincorporated parts of Beaufort County, we set policy and manage the budgets and you know, all that good stuff.
Did you have to be elected to that?
I did.
Wow. Okay. But you have not gotten any clients from being a county councilman?
I don't think so. No.
What did you run on? You had a position of some type. What did you run on?
Fiscal responsibility, for the most part.
Right. Is it a fiscal responsibility in Hilton Head?
Well, we certainly can manage the financial performance of the county a little bit better than we have. We're going in the right direction. You know, it's but there is still work to be done for sure. But yeah, we've got a ways to go.
How big is your office? Tell me what does it consist of? Obviously, you're a partner. You have any other partners?
I do not. It's myself and then two full-time staff.
Okay. All right. Have you seen any growth in the practice as a result of COVID?
As a direct result of COVID? No, we've been pretty steady. I mean, we've been in growth mode. I've been doing this full-time now for 2 years, a little over 2 years. We've been in growth mode the whole entire time. It's been pretty consistent. Been a little bit slow the last month or so, but it's the growth has been consistent. I wouldn't say that we've gotten any growth directly from COVID, but at the same time, I would say that COVID hasn't had any sort of headwind, hasn't added any sort of headwind to the business.
How do you get clients? So what's your way of marketing?
Good question. A lot of different ways. One, a lot of my local clients come from BNI. So I've been in BNI for 2 years, which is a referral networking group. Social media presence has been big. YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Instagram's been really good for us. And apart from that, mostly referrals.
Now, you don't get anything from LinkedIn, do you?
I've been on, I've been heavy on LinkedIn for probably, almost the entire time, almost 2 years now. And I wouldn't say that I've gotten any business from LinkedIn.
Well, wait a minute. I take that as an insult. If you weren't on LinkedIn, all right, we could not have had you on this podcast. So I would think that in itself is worth being on LinkedIn, don't you?
Absolutely. I stand corrected. Basically all of my...
I'm glad you did. Okay. Yeah. Did you go for, you have a bachelor's degree in accounting or did you go for a bachelor's degree in finance?
Accounting. But Elon, it was a great school, great experience. It doesn't look, my wife and I, we went through there 3 years ago and it's been a minute since we graduated for sure. But
they have a lot more buildings. What have they done? They've grown.
Everywhere I lived, with the exception of one place, has been torn down and replaced with something bigger and better and newer and all that stuff. So it's, from that perspective, it's a little bit sad, but it's great to see how much it's grown.
Why'd you pick Elon? Any specific reason?
A couple of reasons. The short answer to that is that was the only Division I golf school within driving distance.
Okay. So you're a golfer? You're a golfer.
Yeah, and within driving distance of New Jersey that my parents would approve of that also had open tryouts. So I did not get recruited to play Division I golf, but I decided that I wanted to play Division I golf, and I was momentarily successful in that endeavor. But they had open tryouts and sounded like a good idea, and that was part of it. But apart from that, I mean, it was, or still is actually, and an academically good school.
So you didn't get any money for playing golf, did you?
Very little between my sophomore and junior year.
Why did you pick accounting as a major?
Well, my dad was an accountant and he was the CFO of an insurance company. And I wanted to go, I originally wanted to do finance. And he told me like, look, accounting's the way to go. You can do everything that you want to do in finance with an accounting degree. And it gives you a little bit more opportunity. Plus, you can go get the CPA and everything comes along with that. So he kind of swayed me in that regard. That was probably the biggest influence as far as why I went and did that. Because I took accounting in high school. It did not go well, I'll tell you. But I took it again in college and really liked it and did well. So you know, it worked out in the end.
In high school, it's what, bookkeeping? Is that what they teach you, basic bookkeeping?
Yeah, it was. And it was very, you know, it was very, very tedious. Everything was like paper and pencil and, you know, make sure that your account numbers are correct and T accounts. And when I was 17 years old, that did not resonate even a little bit with me. And I really just did not like it.
But are you happy you did it? Taking bookkeeping in high school, did it help you with your accounting? Well, I think principles of accounting it would help you with, right?
Did
you understand debits and credits better than a lot of people?
No, that wasn't until college. In college, the professor that I had my freshman year really kind of opened my eyes as far as what this actually is and why we're doing it. So she had a really big impact on me. I had her for several classes in undergrad. But in high school, I would hesitate to say that I got much out of that class, to be honest with you. It did not go well.
Did they only cover in high school debits?
No. No, I think they covered both sides of the ledger, if I remember correctly.
All right, good. That's good. Now, I took a course in high school in bookkeeping, and I felt it helped me with principles just for the first 2 days, actually. the first semester. It was good. I mean, it helped me, and I would recommend people do that. But after I took that bookkeeping, I said to myself, I don't want to be an accountant. This is so boring. All right. So my mother said, you're going to be an accountant. All right. Because you can't be a doctor. You're not bright enough. You can't be a lawyer. All right. Because you're not bright enough. But you could be an accountant. So I said to my mother, I said, what does that mean? Is there something wrong with me? No, she says, everyone in the area here in Long Island, they're all CPAs and they're all wealthy. So anyway, I did that. Never had intention of doing CPA. If you are a CPA, if you wanted to go into a finance position, you could do that, right?
Absolutely.
But you can't do it the other way, can you? With a finance major, becoming a CPA?
Very difficult.
No, right?
Very difficult, yeah.
One of the big areas now is advisory services, all right? With artificial intelligence and bots and schmats. Tell me this. Are you heading in that direction with the new technology? Are you keeping up with that? What are you doing with all this new technology that's going to be coming out or is out right now?
Good question, and I really like that topic. We're doing a lot with technology. We always have. We always will. You know, a lot of the bones that I've made in my career have been with automation and,
right.
You know, I taught myself how to code and things like that. I built my own, right? And one of the reasons why I went out on my own to do the practice full time was I figured that I could apply that to small businesses. So that's kind of how I got here. What we're doing with bots is a lot of quality control work. A lot of the checklist that we would go through on a month end basis that would be done by a human. A lot of that's caught by a bot during the course of the month. We're automating journal entries like accruals. Accrued revenue, accrued expense, things like that. And then implementing financial reporting. I think that's a big one. That's not necessarily a bot, but that's technology that I don't think really existed in the way that it exists now, you know, a couple of years ago.
Right.
Artificial intelligence is a little bit trickier, I think, mostly because, you know, the size of clients that we're dealing with they have a lot of data from a lot of different sources. But in the grand scheme of what you need for artificial intelligence to really be meaningful, it's not a lot of data. So that's been one of the trickier parts. Artificial intelligence, machine learning, that's a little bit trickier. But yeah, from a bot perspective, I think that the bots is absolutely going to revolutionize what we do.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is, well, first of all, in 2024, they're going to start testing all this technology stuff on the exam. And this way it'll give you a choice of what you want to do instead of just going into public accounting. All right. Were you in public accounting? I'm sorry, I didn't ask you that.
I am, yep.
No, I meant before you started your practice.
No, I was in corporate.
Okay, so to get the license, you either had to work in public accounting or work under a CPA. Is that correct?
Yeah, when I started out, I was in forensic accounting, working in a public, you know, public firm, forensic accounting firm, working for a CPA. So I did 3.5 years there. And then I went into corporate for another.
Why did you become a certified forensic accountant?
I did. I've actually got a dormant CFE credential and a dormant CFF credential as well.
When the exam goes to the point of you have to pick a specialization, right? Then forensic accounting could be one. I think it's more interesting than to me doing public accounting with audits. I don't like audits, you know, but.
I'm with you there.
Yeah. But consulting, you know, you do consulting in a way. I mean, really, you're consulting, are you not?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, anyway, Chris, you know, this is what happened last time. The time flew by, okay? How about for you? Did it fly by?
Absolutely. I can't believe
it. And I hope you enjoyed talking to me as much as I enjoyed talking to you.
Absolutely. Always.
Do you do a podcast also? Everyone's doing podcasts.
I do a YouTube show.
You do a YouTube show?
Well, I do.
What is the show on YouTube?
Basically, we talk about accounting for marketing.
Accounting for what? Marketing?
Accounting for marketing agencies, yeah. Marketing.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, obviously, I wouldn't fit in on that information, correct? Can I assume I won't be asked to be a guest on that? You know,
unless you had a marketing agency, then yeah.
I do. I go marketing every week with my wife to the Giant supermarket. So I think I'm pretty well versed in marketing.
There you go.
Okay. Give me a call. I'll tell you what the specials are at Giant supermarket. Okay.
Sure thing.
Anyway, today we had Chris Hervishon. Hervishon. Is that a French name?
It is.
All right. And Chris is a virtual CFO in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And I'll give you this plug. All right. If anybody is looking for a CFO, all right, how do they get a hold of you, Chris?
The website's the best way, betterwaycpa.com. You can send me an email, chris@betterwaycpa.com. You can find me on Twitter. The handle is Chris Hervishon. And Instagram, betterwaycpa.
Let me spell Hervishon for everyone. It's H-E-R, V as in Victor, O, C as in Charles, H-O-N. Chris Hervishon, okay? And I'm sure Chris would be happy to speak to you. If you're looking for a CFO, it's a lot cheaper dealing with him than hiring a CFO. So anyway, take care, everyone, and we'll see you again every Tuesday, a new podcast, new guests, new subject. All right, take care, Chris. Thanks again.
Thanks, Phil. You too.
This is Phil Yeager. Thank you for listening to CPA Review and More. And we hope, once again, you'll continue to support us, watch our podcasts, and also, we would appreciate it. If you like it, all right, write something on our social media. It's very important to us. All right. So, good day, everyone, and we'll hopefully see you again. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on YeagerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.